Good morning, everybody. This is Julie with the Iowa Healthcare Association. Welcome to the second half of our MCO monthly call, now with our Amerigroup partners. Brandon is in DC with some other IHCA staff and some of our membership meeting with the Iowa delegation there. So Brandon will not be on today. So we'll go ahead and do a quick roll call. Who do we have on for Amerigroup with us this morning?
Hi, John McCauley is on.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Hi, what Melody Walter is on.
Hi, Melody.
Hello, Donna Wendt is here.
Angela Dillon.
Good morning, Cherise Smith-Martinez is here.
And hello, Patty Buckland is here from the Provider Experience team.
Hi, Patty. Are you missing anybody, John, that you're expecting?
I'm looking for Shunda Young. And I don't see her yet.
Do we need to wait a minute, or would you like to start with opening remarks for Amerigroup?
I think we need to go ahead. We're already 3 minutes into the call, and I will ping her separately. And I know this pre-submitted questions, we've got some draft responses already. So I may actually turn that over to Patty, since she is the one who drafted the responses and did a very nice job.
Perfect. And I do have three or four others that have come in since, and we'll do that after. But if you want to go ahead and give any updates from Amerigroup since the last time we have met, we'll start with that.
There aren't a lot of updates to share that have occurred since the April call, and we skipped May. We're still operating in a public health emergency mode. The federal declaration is still in effect, and it appears that it will be extended beyond July because we're inside the window that they are supposed to notify us that it would expire. So into October, with the state plan amendments still in effect. However, we are tracking with monthly conversations with the Iowa Medicaid enterprise on what the unwind of those public state plan amendments and some of the exceptions have met, and following their lead on what that will look like. I think with that, I'll open it up to anybody else on our team that has any updates that they want to provide at this time. And if there are none, then we can move into the next part of the agenda.
Excellent. Any other updates from the team then? All right. I'll take silence as affirmation. So our first pre-submitted question was, home health providers are again beginning to receive a large influx of recoupment letters for the reason of claims paid as primary payer OHI. These are for residents who are duals and billing Medicare would be fraudulent as they are not homebound. Is Amerigroup aware of this, and are these letters being stopped? We went through this like a year ago with improper recoupment letters.
Hi there. So this is Patty Buckland. I'm with Provider Experience team. And short story is anything that gets caught up in cost containment is caught up because of some audit that we've done. Or maybe a provider sent in a recoupment like request. And so that kicked off some kind of a QA process. So the best way to undo that is to reach out to the agent on the letter and ask those questions, and if a documentation is required, you know, you can get that to that agent and that'll stop that letter. To my knowledge, we're not stopping anything across the board. And also I had some questions that I reached out to John about, like, do you know which providers this is? Because we could, in provider experience, we can assist the provider in reaching out to cost containment. But for any provider in our network, if you're getting a cost containment notice and you feel it's not appropriate, the best way to undo that is to reach out to the cost containment agent on your letter and offer your dispute if that's the way to go. If it's overwhelmingly inappropriate, that's fine, but you would want to reach out to that agent so that they could stop that and then enter that into their QA process. Ideally, then that would stop that from coming back around. So I don't know if that's a great answer, but that's kind of very simplified without knowing more about which provider this has occurred with.
So, and the upfront part of that question is, does Amerigroup, are we aware of it? And up to the submission of this pre-submitted question, that was the first that we were hearing that there was a round of cost containment going on.
So this is Julie with the Healthcare Association. Just a quick question on the back end of that is that, so if the provider has the correct Z code on their claim, it should not be getting caught up or denied. Would that be accurate?
Yes. That's my understanding. If the algorithm is working the way that it should be, and everything that I've seen from my perspective with providers that I support, that is seeming to be appropriate. But there's lots of chat out there right now, even as we've talked. If you do have claims that you feel like you billed appropriately and they're caught up in that cost containment audit, the best way to work through that is to reach out to the cost containment agent and have that dialogue.
Yeah, we'll get to the chat, which I have a feeling has some further dialogue regarding that. The second pre-submitted question, we have associate members on our calls with us. This question was submitted asking about adjustments to reimbursement for fuel through a fuel surcharge or rate modification. Is this an option, and who should providers reach out to have these conversations?
Sure. So Access to Care is our transportation vendor, and I believe for Iowa Total Care it may also be the same. And I can verify, and I do verify, that Access to Care does provide mileage reimbursement for licensed drivers that would be transporting Amerigroup members to their medical appointments. The member needs to be in the vehicle, of course, like that's the point. And trips are typically pre-scheduled, and mileage reimbursement would occur with Access to Care. I have a phone number for them, and I can pop it in the chat if anyone wants to reach out to Access to Care. I don't know if that correlates with the question, if that's the type of transportation we're seeking to find more information about. But that's the only way that I am aware of to reimburse for mileage is for patient transportation.
Thanks, Patty. All right, so I'm going to go into the other questions that had come in that I have in front of me before we head over to the chat. Let's see. So this is a home health provider. They received 16 remits electronically within the last 2 weeks and 4 remits via the United States Postal Service, so via mail. I got on Availity to search remits for Amerigroup, and they don't list the 4 remits that were sent via mail. Is there a reason that Amerigroup would be sending remits via the mail versus electronically?
So this is Patty again with provider experience. My understanding is when providers enroll with electronic data, that'd be the EFT, and then, of course, receiving the 835 file back, or 837, whatever the number is, back, that's the electronic process. And to open that electronic door, all appropriate NPI intents must be registered for that process. So I'm wondering, and if I were to support a provider through this, if they have a specific NPI 10 combination that they're not getting electronically and they're only getting that on paper, that may be an NPI 10 combination that is not enrolled in the EFT process, if that makes sense.
And I just see that in the chat, somebody, and I'm just looking at the last one that came in. Well, not anymore, but we've been receiving waiver remits through mail as of 5/20/22. Our home health are still through availability. It doesn't have anything to do with our registration. So I'm not sure. Would somebody on your team be able to research that and get back to Brandon, Patty?
Yeah, short answer would be yes.
Perfect. All right, the next one submitted. We have a provider, let's see, this is home health as well, receiving a denial, wondering if it's a known problem with this particular denial going out, wondering if the batch will reprocess. And the on the denial sheet, or on the sheet they sent, it was an explanation code of PPC45, exceeds the ambulatory payment classification rate, charge exceeds fee schedule maximum allowable or contracted legislated fee arrangement usage. This adjustment amount cannot equal the total service or claim charge amount and must not duplicate provider adjustment amounts.
That seems really specific, Julie, and I'm wondering if you can get back with that provider who submitted the question, and we can get that provider connected up with a provider experience rep, so we can see some claims level information to better understand what's going on.
Who would the best person be to send that to, John?
So I believe that, so the question, I mean, if you
if
want to send it to me.
We forward it on to you.
You can forward it on to me, or you can submit it per the normal process. A provider can submit the question to the provider experience inbox, and then that will be triaged out to the appropriate provider experience rep.
Just making a quick note there. Let's see. Are other agencies receiving denials on MA30, incorrect bill type, and N as in Nancy, 471, incorrect HIPS code? This home health is having a lot of denials in the past months with these because of AmeriAdvantage. We also received 6 recoupment letters because of Medicare as primary. And of course they only have 60 days on the recoupment letters. Any advice on that one? The AmeriAdvantage issue, the MA30 incorrect bill type, or N471 incorrect HIPS code.
This is Patty with the provider experience team. I am not aware of that. I haven't had a provider that I support bring that to me personally. So I would urge that individual to reach out to their rep or use the contact us feature on our website, or like John said, you can send it to the bulk email box with the claim example. We'd be happy to dig into it, but I'm not aware of a particular problem. I'm sorry.
All right. The last one before we head to chat seems to be somebody, let's see, another home health having global issues. Wondering if there's a global issue with claims being denied for the GO300 LPN visit because only the GO299 skilled nursing visit is authorized. These codes are interchangeable, both using revenue code 551. And it's hit or miss. Some claims deny while others pay. It started when their authorization site changed in mid-February, wondering how to get this resolved. Today, they had 8 remits and 4 of them have been disputed. Very frustrating. Are you guys aware of an issue with the 300 versus 299 being interchangeable, LPN versus RN?
I am not.
Are you guys able to look into that and get back to Brandon?
Sure. I'm looking to find the question. Brandon, is this something that you've reached out to your rep about? Like, do we have examples?
This was this question is not in the chat. It came to Brandon's email separately.
Okay.
Actually this morning. So it was forwarded to me to bring up on the call today.
Okay.
Yeah. I think to Patty's point, it seems like we're going to need the provider identified and the specific, maybe some claims level data so that we can better know what's going on. But at this point in time, we're not aware of a global issue, but being able to have a provider experience rep look into this a little bit closer based on the provider's TIN and claim level information will be helpful for us.
All right. I'm going to flip over to the chat and move up to the top there. When can they expect dual eligible member claims who are enrolled in AmeriVantage but not Medicare qualified for the home health benefit to process through the Medicaid benefits as they were billed? We have several of these. Our provider rep says she can't help because she can't see the Medicare claims. This is becoming very frustrating.
I will share, this is Patty again, in the provider experience team, we very recently, like just in the last couple of weeks, got access to see the Medicare claims. So that's helpful, and I think we're moving in the right direction as far as being able to support those kinds of questions. That being said, this is from Dawn. So Dawn, I'll circle back with you and see if these are things that are something we have a project going on for, or if they're standalone, but I can circle back with you, Dawn, on that.
It looked like Lacey right under her just had said the same thing, that she has the same question, was on the phone and couldn't get an answer.
Yeah, I do know that the customer service phone numbers for the AmeriVantage, the Medicare line of business, and the Amerigroup, the Medicaid line of business, they are separate teams because they would work with separate benefit limits and that kind of thing. So if you're calling the Amerigroup phone number for customer service, it is you're reaching the Medicaid expert persons versus the Medicare. So they are, it is separate lines of business. So it's not all for one. But I know us in the provider experience team that support the Iowa markets, we did very recently get access to those tools.
Excellent. And then Don also asked why dual eligible clients whose claims are clearly billed with the required Z code of that Z7689 diagnosis code indicating they are not Medicare qualified. When will these claims stop denying for primary EOB?
I don't have a great answer on that one, but sounds like that's similar to the cost containment mess we already talked about. If you're using the right diagnosis and it's being caught up in that, that would likely also align with this issue if we're not paying them correctly at the get-go. So I will take that back and see if I can get some clarification on how those edits are hitting.
Oh, yeah, because I think we've actually battled this since the beginning of our time with managed care in the state back to April of 2016. And I think your guys' fix has been put into place. Would that be accurate?
Yes. So my understanding is we have established our claims adjudication software that if we do see that Z code on there, it should process correctly. I don't know if it has to be in a specific diagnosis alignment. I think it just has to be on the claim, but I'll take that back and see if I can get some clarification, because for myself, it's kind of fuzzy. Like, I don't think it has to be primary. I think it can just be on the claim in any diagnosis filled, but I'll double check on that.
Yeah, and this is Julie with the association. So we've had multiple conversations about that. It cannot be in the first three spots because those folks get scored and paid.
Right, with those other diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the reality is for them, it's going to be in the last spot or at least after number three. So it's not affecting their scores and how they are paid through the PDGM model. So you wouldn't find it in the first couple anyway. Okay. How long should we give our provider rep to respond to our emails? She was great with answering the first time, but hasn't responded any since.
That's an awesome question. I was waiting to see if anyone else had any feedback on that. So in the provider experience team with Amerigroup, between the Medicare and the Medicaid businesses, we are fully staffed, I believe right now. And so that's been good. We've had some new hires come in just the beginning of this year. So that may attribute to some concerns. We've had some realignment of like what systems and counties we support. That could be some of the concern and problem, but there are the three ways to reach out to us. You could reach out to the individual rep if that's not going well for you or you don't feel like you're getting appropriate response. You can use the contact us feature on our website, and then that will get it to our attention in a very escalated way. And then, like John said, you could use the provider experience bulk email box that we do work and manage down. So I hope that is helpful.
Maybe it's further down, but if somebody wants to just put that provider bulk email address in the chat, and maybe it's there, I haven't gotten that far yet, that would be fabulous. We've noticed a delay with claims processing. Is there a known issue at this time?
Yes. So we are having delays with claims processing. It's been pretty consistent, I'd say, and feel comfortable saying the last year, both with claims processing first out the gate, and then also with disputes that providers may be putting in using the Availity tools, or if you're calling customer service and they're helping you prepare a dispute, a lot of things that need manual processing, which is a human person moving that forward, like the whole world, we're all understaffed. And so our gold star standard is to have stuff out in 30 days, but I know it's been taking longer than that. Specifically, if you have something that needs medical records review or documentation reviewed, those kinds of things, that they are just taking longer at this time. So we continuously try to do better. And I feel like we catch up sometimes and then we fall back behind. So it's been quite fluid. So that's a very bulk answer, but I would be in agreement that you're probably seeing delays across the spectrum.
Thanks, Patty. Just reading through some, we've kind of addressed some of the Z codes and the denials, but it looks like we've got multiple folks saying, just received another overpayment request. They're putting the Z code as a diagnosis and continuing to put XB in box 80, still not getting paid. Are you guys able to do a search and see what's going on with these issues with cost containment and all the denials? It looks like it maybe is more of a global issue here. Another person right under her said the same thing. They're also having the same issue.
Yeah. Again, I would just reiterate, I was not aware of a particular issue, but if this is indicative of it, I'll get it escalated and I can get answers back out to the group via John or whoever. So
perfect.
More to come.
Are you aware of any issue in EDI files going through to Waystar? We quit getting EDIs about 2 weeks ago and have been receiving paper remits. Not sure.
I'm not. I've never worked with Waystar. I know one of our preferred vendors is like MDON and some of those others, but I've not worked with that vendor before. So I don't.
Don, if you want to send that question to Brandon at iowahealthcare.org, he can maybe get a question out through our communication platform and see if there's anybody else having that issue. I would like clarification on the denial code that shows alert, consult our contractual agreement for restrictions, billing, payment information related to these claims. We have had this come up several times for home health care. How do we know what to send in to prove we should be paid? Anybody on the claims team able to address that?
I don't know that we are able to give you a detailed answer right here, right now. The provider could submit to the provider solutions rep so that they can look at some claims level information to research what's going on and get a response out.
Okay. And then we had a please take this back. This person has put a case number in, submitted through the provider rep portal on 427, and they've not had a response as of yet. So we have another one with these cost containment unit recoup letters. If somebody on this call, without giving any PHI out, could send one of those letters to Brandon So we can have a look. It sounds like there's another big something going on there that we maybe need to have a look at. But we cannot have any PHI sent. We submit documentation, UB showing diagnosis Z-code and remarks to the cost containment unit, and they still come back and uphold their decision to take back payment than what we are doing. So yeah, if we could see one of those letters, that would be great. I'm not sure what the project is, but it's still tying back into not homebound, so. What is the purpose of the cost containment? You recoup via claims, recoup via audit, multiple issues of recoup more than once. Would it be accurate to say, and I think this has been an issue in the past, for those Amerigroup folks, when they call cost containment, they can't tell them anything, but when they call back to Amerigroup, you guys say you can't see it either. So would that still be accurate? Should they still be working with the cost containment number? Because I think they're getting some back and forth with that as well.
So cost containment is just our overpayment recovery team. They are Anthem or Amerigroup folks. It's not a separate vendor. Like you're not talking to a different country. They are part of our business. So I'm not sure why they wouldn't be able to assist. Their letters are specific. They have project numbers, usually lists of claims if there's multiple claims within a project, that kind of thing. If you're calling cost containment with a question about an EOB, they probably can't see that source of truth because they're not working from an EOB. They're working from their like claims audit groups. So I don't know if that's helpful to just distinguish, but cost containment, they're not a separate company. They're not a vendor. They're part of Anthem and Amerigroup. But if you're calling them with like an EOB question, they can't see the EOB. That may be helpful just to delineate that. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but.
And if you're going to look up and see if we have a global issue here, we'll wait to hear. I know Brandon and I've had to intervene in the past. But yeah, if these Z codes are there, I'm not sure why it would even go to cost containment, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree. And like even I would even share from provider support previous to this last 30 minutes, I was not even aware of a problem. So we'll see what we can come up with. Obviously, it's a profound thing.
All right. This person, I've been trying to clean up claims with my rep for over a year now and have only heard back from them a couple times. Multiple issues with the July 21 rate issues that they still are not answering me on. Who do we go to when our reps, who we are supposed to reach out to, doesn't respond, which I think you've answered. They can hit that contact us or the general email box. If you're not getting issue, if you're not getting resolution after that, feel free to reach out to Brandon. He can also escalate things and kind of help with the next lineup. So that would also be an option. Patty.
Oh, Julie. So just a second here. Julie Stewart is a manager of provider experiences, and she has a number of her team members on these calls regularly. She has a conflict with a standing meeting with Iowa Medicaid Enterprise that happens to be scheduled at the exact same time as this meeting, and so she doesn't join us. In the past, she has responded to a question like that by urging the provider to send an email to her directly. And so I'm going to drop Julie Stewart's email into the chat in case a provider is having difficulty reaching the provider experiencing rep and is looking to escalate within Amerigroup.
Thanks for that, John. So you'll see that here in just a second. There's no agent listed on the cost containment unit letter. It says only fax numbers or mailing addresses. Is there a number we can call and speak with someone from that unit to dispute? And I think that has been an issue in the past. And then when they fax in their information, they don't get anything back. They never know that it's received. So they don't know what has actually made it through and what is there. So that becomes an issue as well.
Yeah. And this was a big point of topic when we had our Iowa Medicaid annual provider training last fall. And I know in our presentation for that training slide deck, we had multiple slides attributed to cost containment and how to reach them with a variety of methods. So I can work to resurrect that slide deck and share that with the group. I can get it over to Brandon or John or somebody. But I know at that time, because Iowa Medicaid asked us to provide that information as far as fax, email, phone, snail mail, prayer, whatever the method was. So I can resurrect that detail and get it shared.
Yeah, perfect. If you get that to Brandon, we can get it out to membership. Don says there's something wrong with the delivery of that Waystar. And their Waystar is indicating that it is falling back on Amerigroup. They had been receiving them for all the years until 2 weeks ago. So it sounds like maybe something switched a couple of weeks ago for that product to not work now. Might add that to your checklist there. Another home health, 20 plus cost containment letters in the last 3 weeks. The proper codes are on the UBO 41 build. I see now there is a contact on the back page to contact. So I am to contact 20 different agents to appeal these. For the person that wrote that, is there a different name on all of those? Holy cow. I'd also like to know when we received our recoupment letters, which came this Monday and Tuesday, the letters state money will start being taken back on 6/13. They gave us 7 days to dispute. How is it that they don't have to follow their own process and give us more time? Are you aware of only a 7-day window?
Julie, this is Cherie Smith-Martinez, and on these recoupment issues, we do have a new SharePoint that's an internal SharePoint. So I just want to say if people, they always need to do the dispute process for recoupment. We can't, waive or stop any of the dispute process. But if they get a piece of correspondence and there's no agent name on it, as Patty has referred to, or there's information that's inconsistent with what they've known to be the recoupment process in the past, they should reach out to their rep and we can put that information into a SharePoint, and we can also, try to get action on things so that if we need to expand a time frame or do something because, you're getting inconsistent information, we'll be glad to help with those things. So I'm just saying that generally because there's been a lot of recoupment inquiries, but the most important thing to take away is you must always dispute your recoupment. We cannot waive the dispute of the recoupment.
(Clears Let's see. We're receiving HIPS code issues as well. I'm told they would be reprocessed. Then they are stuck on the Medicare side. My replacement rep tells me to appeal. I can't appeal because they're not in your Medicaid system. I keep being pushed around. This has been happening over a year. I've been working with my provider rep and not getting anywhere. I did add Julie C and Melissa H on my emails. Is there something else this person should do or a different person they should be corresponding with?
Julie, could we just clarify? I'm sorry, John. Could we just clarify? They were billed on the Medicaid side, but then the rep is saying that they're stuck on the Medicare side.
This is Angela. I'm with Recover Health. We have biweekly meetings with Amerigroup. Usually Don is our provider rep, but she is out on medical leave. We have another provider rep stepping in. We've had this HIPS issue for over a year now, where all our claims are just rejected out the door. They're not even hitting your system. Then they kind of fix that, so they run reports. But now when they run the report and catch it, it's getting caught on your Medicare side for these dual plans. And what's happening is when I'm getting this remit full of denials, I sent this to our Megan, our provider rep replacement, and she just kept saying, you need to appeal them. I can't appeal them because I can't even see them in your system. So then she tells me, well, you need to call. Well, I call, and then they tell me, oh, yeah, it's stuck in the Medicare side. It never hit the Medicaid. She couldn't send them back. So then I have to send them to them again. And it's like, well, you need to appeal. And I'm like, how many times do I have to tell you? I can't appeal them. So I did add, you know, Megan and Melissa Havig on there, or Julie and Melissa Havig. This is an ongoing issue. I keep being told it's going to be reprocessed. It's been over a year. We have such a high volume with you. I'm one rep. I cannot keep up with all these reports that I'm sending to you guys on the weekly. Like this has that we have to get a resolution to this. We have way too many patients with you.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. It's the same issue that we're having here at Iowa Home Care. We're billing the claims. They have the Z code on them. They're billed with the Medicaid ID number and they go to the Medicare product and they just die there.
Yes, exactly. And we're getting nowhere.
Okay. All right. So, Angela, would you mind putting your email in the chat for me, and then we'll follow up. And I realize this is related to all the other claims that we've been talking about that Patty's also been saying we're going to follow up on, but we'll be, especially since Dawn's out, let us, you know, get back with everyone through Brandon, but could you send your email so we can connect and we make sure that somebody's helping you with
these? Yes, thank you. I just sent it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Hey friends, and this is Patty Buckland again with Provider Experience. So, as we've been talking, we're all really working hard, but we do have three identified issues with our dual eligible persons. So that's going to be our people, our members that have both the AmeriVantage product and then the Amerigroup product. So we do have some internal, tickets open within our configuration and benefit and all of those factors that drive appropriate reimbursement. So we're looking specifically at home health services specific to the LUPA fee schedule. We know that we're having both claim rejections and denials. Both are not appropriate. So we're looking at that, and we're trying to work towards a permanent solution. So that's where sounds like that's what we just talked about, friends. So we are aware of that and we are working on that. And then we have some tickets open for also S5161 and S5160. service. So that's across the board and across the network. So hopefully that helps solve for some of these. We'll get some more information out to the group as soon as we have it. So I hope that aligns with some of that.
Thanks, Patty. We've been receiving recruitment requests for claims from 2017 for COB. Can these be audited quicker? With the audits being so late and members not letting us know they have primary insurance, we are now running into issues getting the primary insurance to pay due to the long delay.
That's an awesome question. And I've had that a lot with the different providers that I have supported, as well as I know others on our provider experience team. Same. So Iowa Medicaid does let us go back 5 years. They go back 5 years for us. So that's how that goes. And sometimes with that stuff, it's just not made clear, or especially if members are disputing their Medicare enrollment piece. I mean, that stuff can go back large chunks of time. So we definitely appreciate that. We do the best we can. And I know our Iowa Medicaid partners do the best they can. But some of that stuff for a lot of our members that we all support who are very transient in their benefits, that's just the way that it goes. I know sometimes if you have such documentation where maybe you tried to file Medicare or another health insurance in the past, you can provide that to cost containment as part of your dispute process, and they may lift that then kind of on a case-by-case situation basis. Sometimes that's helpful. Sometimes there just is no data, and that's just how that rolls. So I don't know if that's a great response, but I do know that there's a lot of moving parts to solve for those problems with eligibility. And that's just the way that that goes sometimes, especially when some of those eligibilities to Medicare specifically may be months and years in the past.
Thank you, Patty. The next three questions are all related, but from three different folks regarding the G300, G229. This is also a home health issue, the G229 being an LPN code, the G300 being an RN code. And those are supposed to be interchangeable as far as a nurse. But it looks like folks are having issues in getting denials if they have a G300, but the LPN went out. Is that a known issue of denials, depending on which nurse is going?
This is Cherie. I thought that Donna had clarified, at least on our stuff, that those are interchangeable. So if you're getting those denials, the best thing to do is to reach out to your rep and have them put them in the Interact system, and we can get them reviewed and or reprocessed. And if there's an issue that comes up then, you know, that we haven't identified out of this discussion, the Interact system would be the best place to have that happen. So taking your claims, your claim numbers, and going to your rep to have those put in Interact would be the best route at this point in time.
Thank you, Cherie. Peyton just made a comment that her particular rep told her that the issues regarding the home health claims being sent to AmeriVantage in error was going to be resolved 7-1. I don't know. Hopefully that's the case. Let's see here.
This is Cherie, and let me just clarify, and I don't want to speak for Patty because she very articulately explained that, but what she was indicating is we have a number, you know, as we're implementing, and, you know, this is still another year of, you know, first time implementation of the AmeriVantage plan in certain parts of the state. And even in 2023, there will be certain parts of the state that will be, you know, the initial implementation. So it's going to be up until 2024 that, you know, we're beyond, you know, it being like a startup year for the Medicare projects. So, but what Patty had indicated is there are a number of, you know, identified issues that have opened. It's meaning, you know, our IT people, our operations people are working on resolution to fix some of those glitches. So, you know, obviously that detailed information about 7-1, that's likely accurate, but we will go ahead and verify that also. I didn't think to bring, there's a huge spreadsheet that has a lot of those projects on. I didn't pull that so that I would be able to reference that today. So I apologize, but we do have a number of open projects. So that probably is quite accurate.
Thank you. Let's see, having issues with two previous hospice patients that claims are being denied not room and board, regular service claims denied as not part of our contract. I verified prior to admission of these patients that we are in network and our charges would be covered. Have contacted our rep several times last attaching our agreement, not getting back to me. Should this person reach out to someone that's on Firmware Group, or how would you like him to proceed with that?
So, Julie, this is Cherie, and I'm sorry, I was writing notes from my last comments, so I made sure I followed up, so I missed part of that question, but I did hear at the end that they didn't feel like they were getting follow-up. So, Patty had indicated, you know, reach out to your rep or use one of the other tools where things will get directly routed to the rep. And, you know, in those direct routing ones, I just want you to know that there is a tracking system in those. And, you know, there is an expectation that they're, you know, at least they may not have an answer for you, but that they're the reps try to respond to those and acknowledge that it's been received within about 48 hours of receiving those. And when I say 48 hours, we're talking business hours. So like if it was, you know, over a weekend, that would not count. But that's the best way. And I just want to apologize because today we've heard a lot of, you know, people not being able to get in touch with people. And I just want you to know we've had a lot of changes occurring. We're implementing a number of things and new systems and new ways, you know, for communication. And, you know, it has been a little bit rocky as we work through some of the bugs in these systems. But one of the things that we have, you know, in process at this point in time is all of these systems are intended to, you know, reduce the number of people that you're reaching out to and for you to be able to make direct contact without having to call, you know, get referred to people, send emails and so on. You know, we're really putting an electronic system in place. So if you could just have a little bit of patience while we work through some of, you know, our implementation process, I think you're going to find that it's a much more efficient and a much more direct communication process, you know, with your reps and with other parts of AmeriGroup. So we thank you for your patience. And we do recognize that it's been a little rocky as we've been implementing some of this stuff.
Thank you, Cherie. The next one's a little long, but I'll read it here. It says, is there a way to have home health authorizations combined or built on? I do 60-day OSS on routine patients. If they have an extra skilled nursing visit during that time frame, I have to do another auth request that has a new authorization number. When I submit the claim, the authorization numbers do not get applied to the correct dates of service, resulting in dates not getting paid due to over units. I have tried to break out the PRN visits so they are not grouped on the routine visits, and it is still an issue getting it processed under the correct authorization number. I've tried provider disputes and spelled out the different auth numbers with dates of service and still get claims upheld. I've tried to reach out to the provider reps with the dispute spreadsheet and still no answer back. Any ideas on what should be done?
This is Donna. Oh, go ahead, Angela. I'll let you speak. Go ahead.
I couldn't tell if I was on mute or not. I guess I was. This is Angela. I'm one of the team lead for the outpatient UM nurses. And Rachel, can I reach out to you so that I can get some authorizations to look at so I can really understand what exactly you're saying? I think I do, but I want to just look at the ones that you're referring to so I can get a better understanding of what the real issue is with the on the off side, if there's something we can do on that side of the piece. I can give you a call after this meeting, or I can, either way, I can call you too if you want. Email, call. Got it.
I think we'll go to this last question, and I know there's more, but we're coming up on our hour. So, for those folks who have additional questions, if we didn't get you answered, feel free to reach out to Brandon or I. It's brandon@iowahealthcare.org or julie@iowahealthcare.org, and we can work to get your questions addressed. So our last question here, how do we apply for additional units for residents that require more services, and how do we get an update to see how to up the rates in AL and MC facilities for the new year?
I think that question actually has, there was a couple of questions in there in regards to the rates. I'm not at liberty to talk about that. That's not my wheelhouse. In regards to the units, I think that kind of dovetails into the question that Angela actually talked about. And so I think we're going to take that back and process through that and see if there's something that we can do to make it easier for you guys. No promises, but we're going to try.
Thanks, Donna. All right. So I will get a list of questions at the end of this recording, so Brandon and I'll be able to go through those. But I want to thank our Amerigroup folks for being on with us. We had a full agenda today, being off last month. So again, thanks to John and your team, Donna, Angela, Sherry, Patty, Melody. I don't know if Shonda made it, but thanks for everybody for joining us today. We appreciate that, and have a great rest of your day and week, everybody.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.